Welcome, everybody, to Midday Magazine for this Thursday, November 21st, 2024. Have your host, James J. Mailoff, here. And today, we're welcoming in our good friend, Cranberry Outreach Specialist with UW-Madison Extension Wood County. We have Allison Johnjack with us. Allison, how you doing?
Doing wonderful. Doing real great, having wrapped up a nice harvest and moving into the swing of the winter planning and preparation season.
Allison, I don't have to tell you, if we're talking cranberries, this is the place to bring it. We love talking cranberries in this area, and I want to get right into that successful harvest, if you don't mind. When you say a successful harvest to city boys like me, to people that may not know exactly what that means, what do you specifically mean by that?
A lot of things lined up really well this year. We had very questionable growing conditions early in the season with an unpredictable winter and a very wet spring, but we were able to rally and come up with indeed yields that in most cases, and especially in Wood County, even outperformed last year. And so this makes our 30th consecutive year as the top cranberry producer in the world, the state of Wisconsin. So
that is
successful. Yeah. Go ahead.
I'm sorry. That's just very impressive to hear. 30. I didn't know that it was 30 years in a row. I thought I did my homework on this. I did not know that. That's cool.
We have now surpassed Massachusetts 30 years ago, and Wisconsin is, kind of undeniably the top in the world right now. In addition to having very good yields, weather was good for harvest, so people weren't needing to wait on, even though there were some very windy days, there were no days that kind of forced labor to a standstill. We had a very kind of productive, smooth, even though the lack of water was unusual, it was easy to work through, so also a very pleasant harvest for those who were out in the fields and out in the trucks helping people out.
And you mentioned it, this was in comparison to last year, a successful one. Not to say last year's wasn't, but last year's maybe this was a little bit better than last year's.
Correct. So last year's was actually also, I believe, a record in its time.
I thought so. Yeah.
And our forecast models had thought that, and by forecast models, I mainly mean growers, both, some satellite overview imagery, but also growers taking hand samples with their hand rakes and extrapolating, had expected that yields would be a little bit below last year's, but when we actually finished up the harvest, it turns out that we did surpass last year's, at least in the Wood County area. So we were feeling a little bit like we need to improve our sampling methods so that the receiving stations can do a better job staffing for when we're going to bring in a bumper crop.
It's an interesting side part of this to hear, and it certainly helps us hold on to that crown of being the champions of cranberries around here. What about the color development, Allison? How about that?
That was one thing, and largely because, I guess I shouldn't say definitely because, but one thing that made this harvest more challenging than last year was that not all of the varieties had fully put on their harvestable color all at the same time. Usually we have early varieties, a couple of mid varieties, and then some late varieties in terms of their ripening. And so growers will harvest the early varieties first, will harvest the mid varieties next, and then go into their late varieties. Usually by the time you've finished your early varieties, the growers will see that their late varieties have also turned red. This year, there was a little bit of a gap between the early varieties being ready and the later varieties having their full color on. So some growers had to wait a day or two or even a week to let that color catch up so that we would be sending in good bright red fruit to the handlers. So that was a little unusual this year.
Do we know what caused that?
We have a few hypotheses. One possibility is that the cranberries turn red kind of in contact with the sun. And so cranberries that are lower in the canopy will turn red slower than the cranberries that are growing right up on top. And so one possibility is with that really early rainy spring that we had, if we had a little extra vegetative growth, some of the berries might have been lower down in that canopy and not catching as much sunlight as they usually had. That's one thing that is a possibility. It's definitely not proven at this point, but that's one thing that people are kind of thinking of as what one thing that might have possibly caused it.
It's certainly, interesting to figure out what might cause these things, but certainly more important for our growers and our ag industry to be able to find those things out and be able to, fine tune stuff from year to year like they do. You mentioned this as this did not happen last year, it sounds like.
Correct. Mm. Yep, that was unique to this year. Mm. And actually, in my memory, I don't have, other than this year, I don't have in my memory people needing to wait for more than one day ever on color development. And this year it was fairly common to chat with growers and hear that they were waiting for color.
Our favorite part about the cranberry season and talking about these things, of course, is eating cranberries, especially this time of year. But it's just as interesting, I think, to hear about that stuff and to kind of, again, collect this data and see where we are next year with this. And when we're talking again about this next year, Allison. What about the research roundtable? That I wanted to get into that with you a little bit and find out some more about that.
Definitely. So in my role as the cranberry outreach specialist for UW, my role is to help provide research-backed information to growers to help them be better growers. And one really big part of that is helping researchers do research that is answering questions that growers really have and that growers are actively facing in their marshes day in and day out. And so one of the, I think, probably the most important meeting that we have throughout the year is in early November, after everyone, maybe except for a few fresh fruit growers, but after nearly everyone has finished their harvest, we bring everyone together and have little small group discussions that discuss what questions do you have that research could answer for you. And we do that every year on a kind of 1 to 5 year time frame. And then every 3 or 4 years, we'll also do a 20-year time frame and kind of a who's not in the room, who needs to be. But so this year, we had breakout discussions on soil and water quality, on horticulture and plant physiology, on plant pathology, on entomology, and then on general management. And had growers discuss where they see their growing trends changing in the last 5 years, what new information they need. And these discussions are all attended by all the researchers at UW-Madison, listening and asking questions and trying to understand best how they can form research that's going to give growers answers to these questions.
Very interesting. One of the things that I always admire is when an industry, because the cranberry industry is doing well, it is performing well. There's a growing market. There's a lot of increase in awareness of the health benefits of cranberries and the diverse of things you can do with them. Cranberries are doing well, but I admire an industry that sees this and like, well, what can we do more? How can we be better at it? How can we make cranberries even more accessible? Or what more can we do with them? I find that whatever the industry, whatever kind of business we're talking about, the ones that do well are industries that look at things like this and see it that way. And having a round table, having a group of like-minded people that can share information and help this industry grow and even be even stronger.
I really deeply agree with that. I think that everyone coming together to discuss what would give us the next best cutting edge, what would help, hey, I've never dealt with heat stress before, but I think I might have dealt with heat stress in the last 2 years. Has anyone else seen that? What can we do if we're going to have to deal with heat stress, more frequently? Let's ask a researcher what they think about it, and let's ask a researcher if they can come up with best management practices to help manage this new stressor. That is how we are able to kind of roll with the punches that Mother Nature might send us. That's how we're able to have an informed group of growers. That's how we're able to meet all of the challenges that reality offers up to us and come out on top year after year.
Yeah, it's certainly not as we've heard over the years of different things coming up in the cranberry industry that have, you know, been difficult, but it continues to thrive. It continues to do well. And I think in major part because of things like this, that they're always looking at what we can do more and thinking ahead and sharing of information. I think communication and sharing of information is so vital for our ag industry in general, as I've been learning more and more from talking with you all from Extension, whether it's Matt and or talking with you or some others. About how important that is. So that part of this is really unique and cool too to see. Is this the first research roundtable that has taken place?
No, we have been having research roundtables for a good several years. They had actually even begun before I started in my role as outreach specialist, but I have really kind of, you know, taken them on and brought them forward since I started. There is a group of growers that has always known that connection with research, connection with people who can leverage our questions and do functional field research with them. It's always, and of course, every farmer is always trying to do better on his own as well. And you know, she's going out and she's doing a little experiment on her own bed, but when we can have big enough experiments that have statistical significance, when we can bring in the leverage of all the extra labor that, you know, computing power that grad students can bring and these sorts of things, we're able to have more meaningful research things that come and, you know, bear the full weight of, yes, we've tried this on all the different soil types, and here's the answer for each of the soil types, or the answer is the same across all the soil types, but, you know, we needed to find that out. And so the Wisconsin cranberry growers have really been working together with their research partners at UW for a good long time. And I'm proud to have pushed that forward and, you know, moved it in an even more positive direction. But we've been aware of how good that partnership is for many years.
We're speaking with Allison Johnjack, cranberry outreach specialist with UW-Madison Extension Wood County. Allison, during these meetings or just in general talking about this, for those of us that aren't inside the industry, are there some major headlines, major issues that you guys are discussing as far as the cranberry industry? Are there things that you're working on and specifically, or just in general kind of going over, you know, the practices and marketing and some of that?
There's less to do with marketing at these meetings in particular, because a lot of the marketing is done either by the handlers or the growers co-ops or the people who are buying the fruit or an institute called the Cranberry Institute, which is kind of a separate ballgame. So at this research roundtable, it's a lot more about growing and about farm management. So if I could just give like one quick hit from each of the main groups, mm-hmm. We discussed in terms of the plant pathology, one of the major questions this year was whether people feel that they have enough tools to manage rot without developing resistance. Mm-hmm. And so that was a major question. Mm-hmm. There's also a lot of discussion when people do new plantings, if we could have some health screenings of those vines prior to planting to make sure that we're planting healthy stock. Mm. So that's another major question that feels like there should be some good answers able to mm-hmm. be drawn forward from it. When we talk about the general management question, there was a lot about labor, and there was also a lot of interest in laser weeders, since so many of cranberries weeds are perennial woody perennials that are really difficult to get and basically rely on hand weeding, that maybe laser weeders might be a better solution for that. And so we talked a lot with the ag engineering department. In the physiology realm, there were questions I had kind of mentioned earlier about heat stress. Also we had questions given how mild last year's winter was. One of the major ways that we protect against disease and against pests, because it kind of buries eggs, and then also we kind of shore up our plant health, is by sanding every 4 years when we have a good thick layer of ice, and we can take a dump truck out and put a layer of sand down. And no one could sand last year because we didn't have our good 18 inches of ice that we're used to. And so a lot of discussion came about saying, all right, that happened 1 year and we can probably roll with the punches 1 year, but what if we have half of our years we don't have ice that we can drive on? And so discussion there said, well, New Jersey and Massachusetts have already had about 20 years of not being able to drive on their ice. So, and I'm kind of segueing into the next topic here, but coming from that, the next brown bag, we have, you know, virtual brown bag lunches that growers can come and listen to. The next virtual brown bag that I'll be hosting is going to be a grower panel with a Massachusetts grower, a New Jersey grower, and an Oregon grower discussing how they manage to, you know, manage disease pressure, manage insect pressure, manage plant health in a regime where they're not able to sand on ice. And whether they're standing with barges or whether they're pruning or what other tactics they're using to be able to keep their vines healthy in the absence of our usual sanding practice. So that's one of the things that's coming up next month that I'm pretty excited for.
And you're speaking about the grower panel for sanding?
Yes.
Yeah, that does sound really interesting and really important, too, as we're going along here. Just in the bit of research that I was able to find, this sounds like one of those topics that, again, it's great to be ahead on.
Yes, absolutely. And if we need to devise new equipment for sanding, if we need to come up with barges, it's definitely going to be good for local fabricators and local welders to have 2 years heads up. About like, hey, could you try making me an experimental barge and I can see how it works versus having, 200 farmers show up in November and say, by the way, we all want 7 barges apiece.
Yeah.
So hopefully letting people think about it in advance will help us make those partnerships with fabricators if we need to make new equipment. Right now, that seems like one of the possibilities, but I'm looking forward. I was, as we discussed with our coastal growers, in 2 weeks here, I'll know more.
That'll be really interesting. Looking forward to the next time we talk and hearing how that went. And I do want to apologize to you and the audience a little bit, Allison. I got completely sidetracked when you talked about laser weeding. Like, that sounded really interesting to me. It sounded pretty cool. In my defense, lasers are cool.
It
is really fascinating to hear how technology and our ag industry are working together more and more and really benefiting our farmers and helping our customers out there. It's pretty cool. As we're wrapping up, yeah. The planning of the winter summit, just wanted to touch on that with you a little bit.
Yeah. Just one of the things that is kind of the keystone of our year in terms of, you know, researchers do all the research. And then, of course, the research roundtable helps them inform what research to do. But then after having gone through all the projects and come up with answers, we have a cranberry school, which is kind of gradually adopting the new name of the Wisconsin Cranberry Summit. Is going to be held in January, and that is where all of our researchers can come back to the growers and say, here's what we've learned as far as best management practices. Here's the new understanding that we've gained about how plants experience abiotic stress, and here's how you can keep your plants from experiencing abiotic stress on the farm. And so that will be in the middle part of January, the 15th and 16th, and are just looking forward to having all of our growers and all of our researchers with us at that summit and give everyone an opportunity to reap all the benefits that we started sowing maybe 2 years ago at the Research Roundtable, because there is always kind of a two-year process so you get enough data, but we are looking forward to being able to share back directly with the growers everything that they wanted to know.
I saw what you did there with the growing, by the way. That was really good. It's one of those things, too, where, again, going back to what we talked about with the communication and sharing of information and how important that is and helps everybody. But it's also really cool to kind of hear this, how there's kind of this couple of year advancement to this and where we're going with that. And whether it's looking ahead 2 years or rewinding and seeing the data from the past and how that compares to what's going forward.
Mm-hmm. And farmers are good at that, I think, especially cranberry growers, when every August you have two crops on the vine. You have the current year berries and the next year's buds. And I think we're used to understanding the long-term nature of any question and long-term nature of you know, the outcomes of every decision you make, and also, of course, these long-term natures of relationships with our researchers and the researchers' relationships with the growers. So everything, you know, we're in it for the long haul as farmers. So.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and we appreciate that and appreciate the conversation so very much, Allison. It's always great to talk with you. We learn so much more, and I think we get so much more of a better insight into our cranberry industry, which only makes us want cranberries all the more. And of course, we always encourage you to buy local, support local, and support Wisconsin cranberries. Look for that Made in Wisconsin red label and support your local ag industry, everybody. And Allison, if people want to learn more about some of the things we talked about today, maybe even take part in some of the things that we have been discussing, how can they reach you? How can they find out more?
Yeah, we have a lot of published articles at fruit.wisc.edu and then navigate to the cranberries pane or /cranberries. You can also email me, allison.johnjack, allison.johnjack at wisc for wisconsin.edu. If you're, I guess there's always lots of opportunities to, you know, connect with Extension. In addition to connect with cranberries, there's, of course, Warren's Cranberry Festival. There's the Rapids Cranberry Blossom Festival. There's lots of ways to dig in, but go ahead and drop me an email if you have any questions about anything, and I'm happy to connect and share resources.
Appreciate that, Allison. Remember, you can find out more at their website, extension.wisc.edu, extension.wisc.edu. Be sure to follow UW Extension on social media as well. Share their events on your pages. You never know who might see it that wouldn't otherwise. Allison, already looking forward to the next time we get together. Thank you so much for joining us today. Safe travels out there. We'll talk again soon.
Thank you, James. Take care.
And we'll have more Midday Magazine coming up for you right here at 97.5 FM, 1320 AM, WFHR. We are locally grown radio.